We're talking about how to stop the surge in drug overdose deaths here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer. Kent, glad you could be here. A new report out from the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, it estimates more than 93,000 people died from drug overdose deaths last year, rising sharply during the first year of the pandemic. President Biden at a CNN town hall in Cincinnati last month said there aren't nearly enough people involved in mental health and drug addiction services.
We shouldn't be sending people to jail for use. We should be sending them mandatory rehabilitation. Mandatory rehabilitation.
Have you lost someone to an opioid overdose? How has it affected you and your family? Could you access addiction treatment services in your community? 800-642-1234. Dr. Nora Volkoff is director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse at the National Institutes of Health. Dr. Volkoff, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. You know, health experts, they pretty uniformly have told us that overdose deaths would be up last year. But did you expect such a sharp rise year over year from non-pandemic times?
No, we expected that there could be a rise because of the difficulties for patients to access treatment and also because of the stress and isolation. But we didn't expect that it would go to 30%, that 31% almost for the latest numbers from CDC. So it's the largest rise we've ever seen from one year to the other in increases in overdose deaths. So it was larger than we had expected.
Larger than you had expected. And you really point to the stress, the isolation as significant barriers. What about the treatment barriers?
Treatment became harder because many of the community services that were available for patients to access treatment or support were closed in 2020. And the healthcare system that helped to provide, for example, through the emergency department, screening and treatment of individuals could no longer do it. So there was a decrease in the availability of places where patients could get treatment, as well as in support systems that are so relevant for people to be able to sustain recovery. So all of those were impediments.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Carry on.
There was a very good move to actually try to facilitate access to medications by making it easier to prescribe buprenorphine, which is one of the medications that we use to treat opioid use disorders. So in the past, you needed to physically see a doctor that was waived in order to give it to you. And in March, there were changes made so that you could be prescribed buprenorphine through telehealth or a call. And that facilitated and expanded the number of patients that could get access to treatment. And also, they made changes so that the methadone clinics were able to send patients with take out methadone for up to 4 weeks. As opposed to requiring them to go on a daily basis to a methadone clinic, which is quite difficult to actually sustain. And under the conditions of the COVID, it made it even much worse. So those two changes actually helped buffer what otherwise would have been an even worse situation.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Nora Volkoff, who is director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse at the NIH. And we're looking at this sharp rise in overdose deaths in the pandemic and where to go from here. With your insights and experiences, have you or a loved one struggled with drug addiction? How have you managed through the pandemic? Have you lost someone to an overdose? How has that affected your family? 800-642-1234. Dr. Volkoff, going back to these support systems, Wisconsin's health department announced earlier this month that our state will get nearly $50 million in additional funding from the federal government for prevention and treatment services. That's money from ARPA, the American Rescue Plan Act that Congress approved. Is this type of money enough to boost mental health services to a level that you think will meet the need that you see in communities of all sizes?
I would say it's a first good start, but we do recognize that ultimately the magnitude of the problem and the need to actually, on the one hand, provide treatment and support for recovery, and on the other, to actually expand our prevention interventions so that we don't keep actually trying to control a growing epidemic of drug use and addiction in our country, we are going to require more resources. And but it is good that there is attention and recognition that we need to put resources in order to provide with treatment. And also, I think another aspect about it in terms of not just resources, I think that there has to be a commitment to ensure that those resources are used properly and that they are used for evidence-based and high-quality treatments.
Dr. Volkoff, we heard from Suzanne in Milwaukee, called in and couldn't stay with us. Suzanne said they had a family member die from opioids in 2019, and the family member was willing to get treatment, but there was no affordable treatment that was available to them. What about the barriers to affordability?
Yeah, no, and I'm very sorry and for the loss of your family member. And it's not the first time I've heard it. I've heard it many times. And it's heartbreaking to hear that someone that wanted to go to treatment could not access it because of they couldn't afford it. And that should not be. A treatment should be affordable for everyone that needs it. And so one of the main strategies for addressing the current crisis that we're living in our country is to provide for treatment. This will require that the treatment is accessible. And it's, as I mentioned before, is quality, high quality and evidence-based, but also accessible and should be covered by insurance, or whether it's private, Medicaid, Medicare. And that has always been an issue, even though it is right now unlawful not to provide for treatment of substance use disorder. If someone, just like it is unlawful not to provide for treatment for a medical condition. So, but it's not always implemented. Unfortunately, these laws are not implemented. And many patients that could have, whose life could have been saved had they received treatment, did not access it.
Yeah, it's not getting sometimes at the local level. You know, I want to turn to naloxone. There is a national shortage of the opioid overdose reversal drug, and we also hear it's call it by the brand name Narcan. Pfizer's website labels its availability as depleted. I just checked this morning. What is the status of this shortage? What can you tell us?
Yeah, no, we have been hearing from harm reduction groups that they have had difficulty accessing the low-cost naloxone for injection. And to, first of all, for those that may not be knowledgeable, naloxone is a medication that is actually what we call an antagonist. It binds to the same receptor than heroin or fentanyl, and it blocks it. And so if you give it to someone that has overdosed, the drug immediately pushes the fentanyl or the heroin out of the receptor, and it saves the life. It's almost like a miraculous drug. Mm-hmm. And it has actually, so the challenges are you have to administer it rapidly and at the correct dose, and you save a life. But if the medication is not available, then of course you cannot save the person's life. And what we're hearing is effectively by the harm reduction communities that they are having difficulty accessing the low-cost naloxone. So because Pfizer, I mean, you have a generic naloxone and a brand naloxone that is more expensive. And in order to provide all of the doses that are necessary to save lives, you actually, the organizations rely on the low-cost naloxone, which is the same drug, it's just that it's set up as a generic. The harm reduction organizations are responsible for having, my understanding is, given in 2020 more than 1.2 or 1.3 million doses of naloxone. And again, I reiterate, administering naloxone can save a life.
Yeah.
So you just need to use it. You just need to give it.
But
so
why?
This is serious.
Yeah. I mean, naloxone is not free. But as you said, people who use drugs typically get it at no cost from these harm reduction programs. But why is Narcan so expensive?
Well, the generic goes in between $20 and $40.
Uh-huh.
Then there, and naloxone can be sold, for example, you can sell it for injection, or you can sell it in order to be able to administer it intranasally. And these different formulations can cost different amounts of money. So if you want to administer it intranasally, it costs approximately $130 to $140 for two doses. And then there's an auto injector that's more expensive, that is $3,000-$4,000. So there is a variability, and I think that this is the way that the producers of these products are actually trying to recover their investments, like any other drug. And so we've been trying to work because we have helped develop these formulations as an organization at the NIH. We have been trying to work with the companies to get them to provide the products at prices that are accessible, and to ensure that the insurances are actually helping to pay for this, so that the cost to the person is minimal. We want naloxone widely distributed.
Yeah, I want to pause right here with Dr. Nora Volkoff, directs the National Institute on Drug Abuse at NIH. Before COVID, addiction to opioids was largely considered the biggest public health crisis in our country. Have you or a loved one struggled with addiction? What can you say about it? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. Opioid-related deaths in the U.S. surged last year in the pandemic. We're discussing next steps here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The CDC report found that opioids and illegally manufactured fentanyl, in particular, were the biggest culprits in the rise of overdose deaths last year. The National Institute on Drug Abuse says fentanyl is up to 100 times more potent than morphine. Are you or a loved one having struggles with addiction? Where have you sought treatment? Did you relapse? What has helped along your journey to sobriety? 800-642-1234. Dr. Nora Volkoff leads the National Institute on Drug Abuse, stays with us here. Dr. Volkoff, I want to ask you about syringe service programs, or these, you know, needle exchange programs providing sterile syringes to injection drug users and the ability to dispose of dirty needles. We saw West Virginia putting stricter regulation around these programs that could cause harm reduction programs to shut down. Are these syringe service programs effective?
They have been shown by multiple independent studies that they are actually quite effective in preventing infections from HIV, in preventing infections for hepatitis C, in helping linking individuals to treatment when they are ready to receive it for their substance use disorder, in helping them provide support from the community and the interactions that they have. So no one is questioning that these the syringe exchange programs are actually an effective help harm reduction intervention. There's no more need to do more work. We know they are effective.
But critics would argue that they enable dangerous behavior. Is there any evidence of this?
Well, I there is no evidence that they facilitate the harmful behavior. In fact, I mean, people that are addicted really don't choose to take these drugs. It's almost like a hunger or a thirst that the person has. And so you cannot choose not to eat if you're very, very hungry. So if you do not get safe syringes and you have this intense craving and distress because you cannot alleviate it, you're going to go and inject using whatever you find. And this, we know, this is one of the big challenges about addiction, that it actually overtakes your decision making and your ability to control the urges. So there's no evidence that it promotes any dangerous behavior on people that are already taking drugs. It actually, as I mentioned before, it mitigates some of the harmful effects. And if we don't provide this, the individuals will use very risky behaviors, and their outcomes actually can be quite tragic. So that's not a justification to curtail access to syringe exchange programs. There's no evidence.
Do you see that these syringe services are a gateway to treatment for opioids?
There has been several reports of researchers that look into how syringe exchange programs actually affect the lives of people with substance use disorders, and when an individual is ready to access care, they have helped them achieve the connection. And in some instances, the syringe exchange programs are directly linked with treatments in the community. So they serve that purpose too.
We're talking with Dr. Nora Volkoff, who is director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse at the NIH, and we're discussing the surge in overdose deaths in the first year of the pandemic with the new CDC data out, and taking your experiences, your questions, 800-642-1234. Dwayne is joining us from Weston this morning. Hi, Dwayne. What can you tell us about your story?
So about a year ago, I just got a call from my son and said, it was this girl down south. She passed from an overdose, fentanyl, I imagine. And she just got out of the Air National Guard training to be a flight medic, turning her life around, had a daughter. Mm-hmm. Just one night out with an old boyfriend and overdosed and left behind a little girl and crushed her family. And and she knew people too down, Louisiana, that she knew several people I talked to that have passed from overdoses. And then another story, this was just a week ago, my friend's a fireman. We're coming back fishing. He said, "You never gonna guess what happened." Took my daughter down to the park by their house. There's a bridge right there by the river. And he found five little clear plastic packets. Hmm. 1-inch square, and there was like brown sugar in them, all sealed up, and just like not trying to be hit or anything for like a pickup later. Probably fell out of a backpack. So they called, sprang the police. They came. It was fentanyl, $2,800 worth, I think they said it ended up being a value. But so parents should be really, talking to their kids if they find anything wrapped like that, So those are two things that.
Two stories. Yeah, Dwayne, thank you for sharing those stories. One about accidental overdoses and the other about child accidentally seeing it. Dr. Volkoff, what would you say?
Well, that it is these very tragic stories are stories that we're hearing all over America. It's not one region or the other, it's one group or the other, it's one age or the other. We're seeing everyone affected, and the issue now with the type of drugs that are accessible and available and being sold is that they're extraordinarily dangerous. And so when one says fentanyl is, say, 50 to 100 times more potent than heroin, that really, sometimes people don't realize what that means in terms of the risk that they're posing to their lives when you take a drug, because most drugs now are contaminated with fentanyl. Is a way that the dealers can increase their profits. And when you have a situation like that in a park where a child can actually come across drug paraphernalia, I mean, that they by their curiosity, they are going to go touch. If you touch fentanyl, you get exposed with fentanyl in your hands. That can actually be dangerous. And sometimes the drugs are even more potent than fentanyl. So this is a very dangerous market for drugs, and the risks are much higher than what we had, even with pure heroin. So it's a different world.
I want to ask you about the country's three major drug companies reaching that $26 billion settlement with states over the opioid crisis. What do you think is the best way to use this money?
Well, this is money that should be used to actually alleviate the suffering caused by these industries. Selling of huge amounts of opioid medications that trigger the opioid crisis that we currently have. So it should go for treatment and prevention and education in order to be able to help curtail what has been triggered by those practices.
Treatment, education, medicine, how do you educate? How do you reduce the stigma?
Yeah, no, and certainly, and prevention, I want to say. How do we educate? I think that there are many ways that we can educate, but we have to start to educate. One of the things that has surprised me when I go to places where there's a serious problem with fentanyl overdoses is that sometimes people don't really even know how dangerous it is.
Mm.
So we need to educate people that what drugs are and why they are dangerous and what are the consequences. We need to educate them about what is addiction and that it is actually a disease that happens to some and not others, and that it can be treated and that people recover.
Dr. Volkoff, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Nora Volkoff, Director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse at the National Institutes of Health. Ahead this hour, we look at how the pandemic has led to a major shift in school enrollment. Have you signed your children up at a different school or started homeschooling? How did you arrive at the decision? We'll talk about it. News update is next on the Ideas Network.